is submitted.
Case number 07-1797, James Biggs versus Honor Life Insurance Company of America, petitioner. Mr. Moore for the appellate, Mr. Whitmire for the appellate.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I am Frank Morris, counsel for Appellant Unum in this matter. At the outset, let me briefly but initially deal with one thing. At about 6:57 last night, I received what purports to be a Rule 28J filing in this matter, wherein there is a Eighth Circuit 1997 decision cited by the appellee to try and contest what is at stake in this case. Simply put, the case cited, MetLife versus Golden Triangle, has absolutely no application to this matter. It deals with a circumstance where a summary judgment motion has been denied, as even the quotation that they put in their filing makes clear. This is not a case with a summary judgment denied. It is, in fact, a case where we are on appeal of the grant of the summary judgment and the legal issue that is therein stated. Due to the lateness of this, I'll cite two cases to the Court, and I can provide them in writing later. To the contrary, dealing with where summary judgments are granted, those cases are Mandel versus Boston Phoenix, 456 F3rd 198, particularly at 204 and 02, the First Circuit, 2006. And secondly, Meridian Leasing versus Associated Aviation Underwriters, 409 F3rd 342.
You know, the always time, there's a lot of circuits that say, well, there's a denial summary judgment. It's a legal question, not a question of the facts. It can be considered on appeal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Let me move then to the substance of this appeal. The appeal really concerns two errors of the district court. And those two errors were the failure to apply the controlling ERISA standard to the issue before it, and then secondly, to confuse the fact that several courts have, as an aid in interpreting policies, used separate analytical or interpretive approaches. And because several courts have used different analytical approaches, the court confused different analytical approaches with an ambiguity in the policy language. Now, let me note what the policy language at issue here is. It's simplicity, but it's broadness, because those are the two touchstones, I think, that are of importance here. The policy issue language, mental, nervous, or emotional diseases or disorders of any type. What does ERISA command? ERISA commands that we should have language that is provided for the plan beneficiaries that uses the ordinary and popular sense.
When was that language first incorporated?
Back in 1985, Your Honor. That's when the policy was originally put in force.
It's before this spate of cases.
Long before the spate of cases. And the policy language did not change over the course of the many years. What I think happened in this case was, and if you read the district court's opinion, it neglects to come back to the fundamental bedrock principle that in an ERISA matter, The interpretation is supposed to be that of the person of average intelligence and experience. The court never came back to that bedrock principle and instead got into a very complicated analysis using dueling experts over an issue, but not paying attention to the principle here that there's a broad policy definition that should have been given view. Now, this case is here because there's no Firestone discretionary language on de novo review as it was in the district court. The principle, however, where the district court errs is, notwithstanding its de novo review, that does not authorize the district court to rewrite the policy language. What it means is the court is supposed to determine, is there an ambiguity? And then if there's an ambiguity, its job is to try and resolve that ambiguity. Provided to the district court were the various analyses that have been used by courts, namely the symptom, diagnosis, and treatment view of looking at mental disorders. And those would be the focal points that the average layperson would use in analyzing whether or not we have something that falls within mental, nervous, or emotional diseases or disorders of any type. In fact, in the summary judgment briefing, Appellee did not even contest that applying those, any of those three tests, or even all three of those tests, would lead to the result that the average layperson would conclude that the issue here, bipolar disorder, is one that's embraced within the policy definition language. And that's the central point at which we must say the district court erred, because it does not do what it should have done.
What was the evidence regarding what the average person of reasonable intelligence would construe this language?
Well, the evidence, Your Honor, this is a legal issue. It's interpreting the contract. But with the eye of interpreting the contract, the same kind of analysis that the courts face all the time, what would the reasonable person conclude, whether it's a tort case, whether it's would a reasonable person find that the activities alleged in a sex harassment case amounted to sex harassment? The evidence is out there, as we noted, in almost every sense of the word. Everything is out there, including plaintiff's experts, conceded.
A reasonable person might think that there's a difference. You wouldn't call arthritis a mental disease, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
If somebody was hit by an anvil and as a result of that had hallucinations, would that be a mental disease?
If the precipitating situation there, I think, was being hit by the anvil, there's a physical injury there. The mental hallucinations would be flow from that.
Is Alzheimer's a mental disease?
The Unum does covers Alzheimer's as a physical disorder.
It does.
Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, similar things. And if you
dementia
covers a lot of things, Your Honor, including Alzheimer's. So I'm not sure I can answer that question without some greater definition of what you're referring to by dementia.
Say again what you just said. What covers them as a physical disease?
I'm sorry.
What covers Alzheimer's as a physical disease? What was the subject?
The insurer.
You mean they're willing to cover it?
Yes, they do in fact provide benefits as
so
a physical disorder.
How do they distinguish between them?
Because there the primary evidence is that there are the alkaloids. I'm not a doctor or a scientist, Your Honor, but the change is clearly recognized and not in dispute with regard to that which occurs as part of. In this instance,
what about the schizophrenia?
I generally review by the average person, I think by, again, looking at the DSM and by how it's treated, as that would be embraced by the definition of mental, nervous, or emotional disease or disorder.
What if the average person read the front page article in the Washington Post yesterday attributing schizophrenia to dopamine blockers in the brain?
If the person read the article and, I'm sorry, and...
The Post described the physical characteristics of a person suffering from schizophrenia as a malfunction of brain of certain functions in the brain.
At some level, you are.
As a result of which, there are new drugs that are being developed to try to treat it.
At some level, Your Honor, and that's one of the problems with the district court's approach, it is inescapable that some changes in the body occur no matter what the condition or disorder or circumstance would be. And I think this falls largely within that kind of a situation at some level, and that's exactly what happens. And a number of the courts have specifically said, if you follow this notion that you must exclude from coverage of a mental nervous limitation anything that is not wholly absent of any physical connection whatsoever, you have totally eviscerated and written out that which the parties bargained for, which was different coverages.
What is the evidence regarding bipolar? Was she diagnosed as bipolar 1 or bipolar 2?
She's had a numerous diagnoses over the course of time. My recollection, Your Honor, is bipolar 1 cited more, but there were a whole variety. There are personality disorders. There are a raft, believe me, the medical history is long.
Yeah, but a borderline personality disorder is not inconsistent with a bipolar 1 diagnosis. But anyway, what was the evidence to indicate the physical cause of bipolar? Was it conclusive that it's just purely a brain malfunction?
No, the district court's finding was premised on her depression, which kept her from being a, that and cognitive decline, which kept her from being able to be a productive member of society and go out to work. There is no finding, and there's a suggestion in the Appellee's papers to the contrary, but it's not borne out by the record, that there was a finding about causation here. All the district court said was it found that it was bipolar disorder and not borderline personality disorder or something else which disabled her. It did not make the subsidiary finding or the underlying finding of what caused the bipolar disorder. Her experts have theories about that. But there is no test that reveals this. There are some correlates which some people who have bipolar disorder have and some don't.
That's an argument that the issue that the parties have joined here is not presented. If there's no evidence of what the cause of bipolar disorder is, then the question that you're arguing that if it has a physical cause, then it's nevertheless still excluded from more than whatever the total month's coverage is. It's just not presented. You're right about it.
Well, the district court did not make a finding of causation. It said, does the exclusion apply? It found that it was ambiguous in its mind, mistakenly in our view. And then once it did that, it wasn't interested in what caused the condition. It was only whether it was bipolar disorder and whether that disabled. And that's one of the reasons why we...
Why do you need to know the cause?
Pardon me?
If the legal question is to whether or not... I mean, why do you need to know the cause?
We don't need to know the cause, Your Honor. We've never said we need to know the cause.
The thing that's a little perplexing to me is the National Institute for Mental Health says clearly bipolar disorder is a serious mental illness. Character and it goes on to say it's characterized by episodes of depression, mania, and or mixed symptom states, et cetera, et cetera. Now the other side and the district court apparently thought that the mental illness refers only to behavioral disturbance with no demonstrable organic or physical basis. I don't know where that comes from.
It's a construct of the community that's trying to get around mental limitations and policies, Your Honor. That's pretty simple.
There are always, not always, in many mental illnesses, as I read the National Institute for Mental Health stuff, there may be physical causes, physical underpinnings.
Correlates, we would say.
I mean, the Brewer case, I'm trying to understand how the two parties are coming at that. The Brewer case does it right analytically. They look at what a layperson thinks, and they're inclined to focus on the symptoms of the illness, the court said.
Yes, Your Honor.
An illness whose primary symptoms are depression, mood swings, et cetera, the same things defined by the National Institute of Mental Health are characterized as mental illnesses regardless of their causes.
Correct. That's our position in a nutshell, Your Honor. That's exactly our position. and that we...
So, I mean, is the legal question before us whether you can have bipolar disorder that has a physical cause?
No, Your Honor, the legal issue before you is the district court unfaithfully applying ERISA, not applying ERISA, and giving the policy language its usual and ordinary meaning, as would the average intelligent person.
Let me just follow up on Judge Edwards' question. Is it your position that the actual cause of the particular behavioral conduct, the conduct of the individual, the mood swings, depression, mania?
This takes you to the dementia problem.
The cause of it is irrelevant?
I'm focusing on this case, Your Honor. Response to your earlier question...
I want you to focus on my question.
Focus on it.
Well, in response to your earlier question, though, there are certain circumstances where it's only relevant to the extent of whether or not there are items which fall under the physical coverage section of the policy. The issue here is, did Unum properly apply the mental illness limitation of the district courts?
I'm going to ask the question again. Is the cause relevant?
There was no finding here of the cause.
I'm not asking whether there's findings. I want to know, is the cause relevant? Now, I understand why you have difficulty answering that question, but what's your best shot? Is there a yes or a no?
The cause may be relevant in some cases, Your Honor.
Judge Randolph may be thinking about something else, but I mean the earlier questions on when we prepare this case, at least for me, so how do you so easily distinguish dementia?
That's exactly Alzheimer's. Parkinson's.
It's not intuitive at all. As I prepare the case, I'm not getting it. Now, I don't know whether that binds you here, because the first question is whether bipolar disorder is a mental illness, and I go to the primary scientific sources. They don't seem to be struggling with it. But then we look at what you're doing, and you're saying Alzheimer's dementia are different, when a layperson, using the Brewer test, a layperson probably would not agree.
Well, Your Honor, I was going to refer, and my colleague was kind enough to bring me up here. If you look at the DSM, which is one of the sources that ought to be used here, the DSM talks about other medical conditions. The chapter specifically that I'm looking at is deliria, dementia, and amnestic and other cognitive disorders. And so there is a class of other medical conditions where the physical aspect is present, and therefore where there may be coverage under the physical.
Well, there are lots of bipolar disorder cases where there's a physical cause present.
If someone...
Because as you argued, otherwise you're wiping it out. You're wiping out your exception. I mean, at least as I read the literature, that's not news that there may be, in part, physical causes that result in the behavioral problems. And so I'm sitting, as is Judge Randolph, I'm sitting here saying, well, how do you distinguish dementia and Alzheimer's, where there are some underlying physical causes that result in the behavioral problems?
Where other medical conditions, the general medical conditions, and that's the distinguishing line that the DSM uses, that's where the line, I believe, is drawn in interpreting the policy and providing one benefits either under physical or mental nervous.
Why is Alzheimer's covered? Why do you think Alzheimer's is covered? Why does Unum cover Alzheimer's?
As a general medical condition, because there is more, the evidence there is different with regard to the physical aspect of that disorder or disease.
So if they could show that there was a physical anomaly in the brain, then this would be covered?
The issue, Your Honor, is not just an anomaly. The evidence is that there are correlates that are found in some individuals who have bipolar that are not found in others. We're getting into exactly here the problem area, which is it's an ERISA policy where the layperson analysis is supposed to control. when we get into these fine gradations, which
I'm still not getting the answer to my question. So in 1980, when this was written, do you think most people thought that Alzheimer's was a physical problem or a mental problem?
I don't know, Your Honor. It's be speculation on my part what people thought in 19. I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
So
sometime
over time, you're saying, somehow it became part of the national psyche that Alzheimer's was a physical problem. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Your Honor,
do we know when that time arrives?
Well, when every source that is out there, except for some experts, our papers are replete with Judge Edwards pointed to some of the material, and there are many others in our papers. All of those support the notion that this, and the one of the decisions talked about, does it look like, you know, does it walk like a duck, does it quack like a duck? Everyone views popularly.
All these everyones are experts.
No.
Which ones are not?
Well, I think the popular conception of when you say something is being treated by a psychiatrist with psychotropic drugs and psychotherapy, people think psychiatric disorder. That doesn't take an expert. That would be the normal and ordinary person's reaction.
You don't think the normal and ordinary person's reaction is symptoms? And don't people with Alzheimer's have symptoms that ordinary people might think indicate a mental illness?
On the face of that, yes, Your Honor.
And yet that's not enough. And yet you're going to cover it anyway.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the problem with your position. It doesn't look extraordinary, but it's hard to distinguish how you treat Alzheimer's and dementia as opposed to bipolar, because they both can have physical underpinnings.
I suppose you could say that in Alzheimer's, there is a physical change in the brain that can be seen in a CAT scan, while in bipolar there isn't.
Dr. Goodwin, plaintiff's expert in this case, and a primary expert on the issue of bipolar disorder, in deposition, it's in the record, clearly stated there is no test that may be given to discern whether or not...
You got better than that. You got the district court saying that, making that a finding of fact. So is that the distinction?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, it is one distinction. Yes, Your Honor.
Well, then cause is a distinction.
The cause is important.
Or at least cause is important.
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll give you some time for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Whitmire for the appellee, Jane Fitz. Your Honor, the district court had this case on remand where this court instructed that the district court would review the case de novo and specifically suggested to the district court that it review current medical evidence regarding bipolar disorder and also said that it was intensely factual. There was discovery, after which there was a summary judgment motion where they asked for a ruling in their favor, which motion was denied, after which the court held a trial, took evidence, made evidentiary rulings, made findings of fact, and the like. We respectfully submit you have to look at the whole record because their motion for summary judgment was denied. Analytically, when you get into
denied on the legal question as to whether bipolar disorder is a mental disease.
But your motion was granted.
My motion was on contra proferendum rule. That was granted. I agree that they can review that to the extent that that's incorporated, but not the denial of relief in their favor, which they say casts aside all of the findings of fact in the record of the trial court.
It says here, ordered, that Fitz's motion for summary, I'm reading from the decision of the court.
Yes.
Fitz's motion for summary judgment on the phase one issue of the inapplicability of the mental illness exclusion is granted.
Right.
With respect to bipolar disorder.
Right.
Yes, I agree with that.
We can consider that question.
I agree.
The court then went on and said the issue that's going to be tried is,
What does she have it?
Right.
What does she have?
Does she have? Does she have it?
Yes. What does she have?
Does she have it, and does it cause a disability? Lead to
yes, Your Honor.
We can surely consider the disposition on the summary judgment.
That aspect of it,
the
I agree.
The trial doesn't address that question.
I believe, Your Honor, it does, because the judge pointed out in the findings of law after trial what is in fact the established law. We had the burden of proving she was sick or injured and it disabled her, which we did. And that's undisputed. They don't challenge that.
The judge said about whether she has bipolar disorder, right?
The judge said they...
Is that right?
No, Your Honor.
It wasn't?
It was about all of these issues that were...
Wasn't it about that?
That was part of it.
The preceding judgment was whether bipolar disorder... You wouldn't have had the trial if he had granted summary judgment and said bipolar disorder is a mental disorder, because you're claiming it is not, and you have insurance coverage. So then the next thing you want to know is, does she have this, which can be covered under the policy? The preceding legal judgment is clearly appealable. If they win on that, that is bipolar disorder, which you're joined on, bipolar disorder is excluded. No one cares whether she has it. You lose.
They have the burden of proof on that, however, Your Honor.
No. Whether bipolar disorder is a mental illness.
That is excluded. I would say that would be
that
true.
That ends it.
But I,
and
as
that's
a matter.
Now on appeal. Is bipolar disorder a mental illness?
Your Honor, this case is about Jane Fitz's condition and her witness.
Case
is not all bipolar disorder in the world.
First and foremost, whether bipolar disorder is a mental illness condition. If it is, we don't care. And I'm saying this respectfully, I'm not talking about the plaintiff. We don't care whether she does or does not, because your whole case rests on the fact that she does, and we want insurance coverage. You can't get insurance coverage if we first decide bipolar disorder is under the two-year limitation.
If all bipolar disorder is excluded, I would agree with Your Honor.
Okay. That's the issue before us.
And in respect of that, they did have the burden of proof. In respect of that, the case law, for example, the Billings case out of the 11th Circuit dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder, correctly points out what the district court found, that that proposition is ambiguous inherently.
Yeah, well, I don't know why. Let's pursue that. I don't know why it's forgetting the apparent inconsistency, where you have all the points, whatever those points are, you have all the points and their apparent inconsistency in between dementia, Alzheimer's, and bipolar, all right? Forget that. Pretend they don't exist. Now, as I read all the literature, I don't get your notion that because there may be a demonstrable organic or physical basis, it's not a mental illness.
Your Honor,
you said that.
Your Honor, mental is something in the mind. I think anyone will find that in the dictionary, and this is not in Ms. Fitz's mind. It is in her brain.
Behavioral. You're looking at the behavioral symptoms.
Your Honor, there is on page A584 in the record testimony that's an organic disease of her brain.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
It means it is an organic physical deficit in her brain, primarily caused by corticosteroids that are destroying her cognitive capability, according to the evidence in the record.
I thought the judge found that when you have bipolar, this is in the subsequent
trial
you're talking about, which you cite extensively starting at page 3 of your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
That when you have bipolar, when you're depressed, then you secrete corticosteroids.
Corticosteroids are secreted during that portion. That is correct.
Well, so that sounds like it's the result of the disease.
It's part
not
of the disease
cause
process.
Of it, but it's not the cause.
It's part of the disease process. That's correct.
So that I'm not sure that actually helps you.
It's part of the disease process. The disease is in part genetic. It's in part caused by environmental factors.
But the corticosteroids are not the cause of the disease. They are the effect of the disease.
When a disease feeds on itself, it's a combination of continuing cause and effect resulting in erosion.
What is the first mover here?
What is the very first mover? I don't think science has figured out the very first mover.
So
they know about the origin, and they know about its causes, and they know it's in the brain. It's not in the mind.
Which mental illness is only in the mind?
Well, right now, Your Honor, I think no one knows the answer to the question, but they proffered a bunch. They said she had no disease at all, and if she did, she imagined it from nothing.
Let's just go with the bipolar.
But that was what they said in the record.
We have a clear issue here.
Okay, but that
this
may,
is not a trial now. You're talking to three appellate
right,
judges.
But that may be a disease in the mind. They were asserting it, and we don't know. They were saying
at least some of us read the literature. It says experts, Bipolar disorder is a mental illness, unhesitating, characterized, and it shows, episodes of depression, mania, mixed symptom states, and they cause extreme shifts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No confusion whatsoever, none. And no one, where I can find, says if there are underlying physical causes, then we don't call it bipolar. And if there, I don't know where that's coming
dementia
from.
Dementia is...
assert that. No, forget the
It's
dementia.
In the same books, but call
no,
it mental disease.
Forget the dementia exception. I understand that argument. I'm trying to figure out where you're coming, where are you getting your authorities to say if there are demonstrable organic and physical bases, then it cannot be a mental disorder.
First of all,
where is that coming from?
The dichotomy drawn by Unum in the record prior to the case
please,
was physical.
Please, please, please answer my question. My question is really very, I'm trying hard to understand this. Where do you get the authority that says a mental illness refers only to a behavioral disturbance with no demonstrable organic or physical basis? Where does that come from?
The word mental is from the mind, it therefore cannot
do
have a physical
you,
basis.
I'm going to try one last time, and if you don't answer me, I'll assume there's no answer. Where is the scientific basis for that statement, which is the heart of your argument and the heart of the district court's opinion? I can't find it.
The testimony at the trial was, is it an organic brain disorder, page 584. That's what the...
That's not my point. My point is, so if that is in part the cause, who said, what experts, what scientific studies say, if that is in part the underlying cause, it cannot be a mental illness? Who said that?
The DSM said mental illness is a legal question and no doctor can address its meaning. That's actually in the DSM. It's up for lawyers to determine how to apply words in contracts. And the word mental illness says to a listener something in the mind, and it has been established it's not in the mind.
Well, if I use the Brewer test, you would lose.
The Brewer test would be incorrect, Your Honor.
Well, if I use that test, that is what a normal person would assume about this.
I don't know that I would lose.
Am I right?
No, Your Honor, because I think...
Looking at the symptoms, most people would assume a person with bipolar disorder has a mental illness.
If you looked at symptoms without facts, many, many ailments that show up in confusion and in behavioral activity would be deemed mental by a person. The question is, when you go look, do you have to also look at the facts? And I would say, yes, you do. You have to look at the facts of this patient and why this patient is behaving this way and where is it coming from and what has been the effect on the patient.
I'm confused about the state of the record. In the district court summary judgment opinion, there's a footnote 6 that quotes all these experts saying that there's a biological component.
Right.
Was that an issue for trial? Was there a trial on that?
Our expert explained on direct that it was an organic brain disorder. The trial ended up focusing not so much on that, but in their contention that she had all these other things. But our witness put in that testimony.
There was no trial on that question.
We tried it. They opposed it on other grounds. You know, they approached their trial differently.
This is a summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. That's not a trial.
Right, Your Honor. Right. Agreed.
You put on evidence at trial.
That it was an organic brain.
You're talking about the subsequent trial about
yes, 584,
whether or not she had bipolar and whether or not it created a disability.
What it was she had, because they were saying she had a whole bunch of things. That's correct, Your Honor. And we put in evidence saying it was an organic brain disorder.
At the trial?
At the trial. And they put in that she was staking it.
Did the district judge make a factual finding that it was that there was a physical cause of her bipolar?
I think the closest he came to that was his discussion about corticosteroids in his findings, and then he talked about a physical symptomology.
Well,
I don't think he made any express findings.
No, you're better off if you actually read his opinion, which is on your side, first half of the sentence, and not on the second. So. At JA 1748, paragraph 38 of his findings, he says, although bipolar disorder is an organic brain disorder associated with physiological changes in the brain, citing Goodwin, directed 4, there is no test that reveals or confirms the diagnosis of bipolar disorder.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what did Goodwin say?
Goodwin said it was an organic brain disease.
And do you say what that meant?
You said it's not a mental illness?
I don't remember him being asked that specific question on cross.
Isn't that the question?
Well, that's a legal question, Your Honor. That's not a
Actually, it's a contractual question.
Right.
So if the cause is physical, then it's not a mental illness? Is that your position?
I would say if it's physical, it's not a mental illness, but because physicality must be taken into account, we get contra proferendum, and we apply it to an exclusion, so we don't have to get there.
Suppose, this goes to a novel I just finished reading,
okay,
by the way, called Duma Key by Stephen King, and the protagonist loses his right arm in an accident, and he's suffering depression as a result of that. There's a physical cause for
yes.
him suffering depression.
Yes.
Is that a mental illness?
That's not a mental illness.
The depression is not a mental illness?
No, not for purposes of this policy.
The depression, if someone wants payment coverage for the treatment of the depression, it's not a mental illness?
I had an accident in which my arm was removed under this disability policy, and it has
No, not the coverage on the treatment of the arm. Treatment of depression.
That which flows from that definitely would be covered, in my opinion. Here, this policy would cover that. It would be indefensible. It's the same as the policeman who gets shot in the brain and begins to hallucinate.
If a soldier comes back from Iraq and having gone through the tension and the trauma of the war there and suffers PTSD, is that covered by the policy?
PTSD literature that I have to study, Your Honor, having been a colonel in the Army, I would say yes.
Because you can
unfortunately, they're not covered by Unum.
I understand.
They're covered by the United States.
And I would add, A609 also has Dr. Hyde saying that it's a physical
illness. If a psychiatrist diagnoses an individual as suffering whatever, we talked about borderline personality disorder, and said the reason is that the individual was mistreated by his or her parents when they were a child, is that a mental illness?
That's not enough information for me to make a decision yet, Your Honor. I need more facts. I don't know. I need more facts.
So the only mental illnesses that you think are covered here or within this exclusion are ones that we can't figure out why the person has it? Is that it?
No, Your Honor. I think they chose the words. It means that which is in the mind, and we have to look at the facts and see how it stacks up, which is why they went to it. She was faking it, and it was fictitious, and it was somatoform disorder, and those kinds of things which even intellectually it's difficult for us to imagine that there could be a cause. That's why they did it. So there's this universe out there that certainly could be. I'm not going to foreclose it. I'm not going to concede it because I haven't studied it. But I do know that we have a lot of facts on misfits. And we do have a woman who whose IQ dropped from 130 to 87, who has doctors who testified at trial that it is a brain disease, that it's a physical ailment, that we have mechanisms which show how it's self-feeding and it causes constant reduction in her brain capability. We also have the fact that our burden of proof is to show injury or sickness with a disability.
Is
we met it.
Bipolar disorder progressing?
I think like many diseases, different people have different courses over their lives, and it can be. But it isn't always by any means. I mean, just like measles and mumps and cancer, people get over it and some people die from it. And other people just cope with it. I mean, it's a disease, it's a disorder. The human body is full of such things and all of us respond differently.
What, in your view, I want to ask your opponent the same question. Why the exclusion for mental illness?
I would say because they're worried about people faking it.
No, I mean, the other reasons that I'm aware is that those tend to go on indefinitely, and sure is rather captain.
But the same is true for
a
lot of...
That's what they assume, that they tend to go on a very long period of time
same.
If someone's in psychiatric care. That has nothing to do with this case.
But the same is true of someone who loses their leg, skull fracture.
Your view is that anybody who's not faking it can't have a mental illness?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that they picked for the trial this zone of areas.
I'm not asking.
Oh, well,
I'm asking you to sort of... Advise us as to what you think is actually
within thousands,
the exclusion.
There are hundreds and I think probably thousands when you pick the subparts of ailments within DSM-IV alone. And it would not be fair to me or you for me to express my opinion on all of those ailments, as I have not studied them in depth.
Well, if you can't give us anything that's covered by the exclusion, you have a big problem. Just like if they can't give us anything that's not covered by the exclusion, they have a big problem. So I'm urging you, because your case rides on it.
These factitious and somatoform disorders right now, to me, would appear to be those that are in the mind.
So what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Unless somebody can show me something to the contrary, I would think those are mental. But I haven't studied
What are the those? What are you talking about?
Factitious and somatoform
what
disorders.
What are those? What are
those? Are ones where there is no cause.
Could you put that in the vernacular?
That's the language of DSM-IV.
I know. DSM-IV is not the vernacular. Give me an example. Well, let me give you an example. Suppose a parent dies and you are desperately depressed. You become desperately depressed and you go to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist either gives you psychotherapy or gives you psychotropic drugs. Is that a mental illness or not?
At that point, without more, it seems mental, without more. But I'd want to know more about the patient. I want to know that, you know, is that the only thing I should look at in the entire life of the patient?
I don't know how to stress this strongly enough. You are digging yourself a hole which will lose the case for your client.
I would think that would be mental. If those are the only facts, I would think that would be mental, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mark, you're out of time, but we'll give you 2 minutes.
I'll be brief, Your Honor.
Before you begin, one question I didn't have a chance to ask before was on contra preferendum. Is your position that it can't be applied under ERISA to an insurance policy?
Well, we think probably the better argument is it ought not to be applied under ERISA, but in any event, it's a last resort as opposed to essentially a first resort, as the district court did here.
And what is your argument about why it can't be applied under ERISA?
Because under ERISA, since we're supposed to look at the ordinary individual's view of the issue at stake, contra preferendum would immediately thrust that to the court. And secondly, in this case, you have to have an alternative, reasonable meaning, and we would submit that the district court and the plaintiff's construct.
That's why it can't be applied in this case. I'm interested in the more general question. So in Firestone, the court says we're supposed to review the employee's claim as it would any other contract claim.
And establishing a federal common law under ERISA.
Yes. And the way we apply any other contract claim is normally to apply something like contra preferendum.
As a matter of last resort, Your Honor. Correct.
Okay. I'm not asking you for the scope of the doctrine of contra preferendum. Some courts seem to be of the view that it cannot be applied in ERISA at all, and seem to base that on Firestone, and I don't see it. In fact, I see the opposite, and I just wonder.
I think it's a methodological approach as to whether or not the ERISA approach of the focus on interpreting in the ordinary and popular sense doesn't preclude contra preferendum. I think those courts who take that position, that's where it comes from, Your Honor. Whether that's satisfying or not, but that, I think, is the basis for that conclusion.
The Seventh Circuit and the Fifth Circuit and others apply. In light of that, in order for you to prevail, do you have to establish that no reasonable person could believe that bipolar was anything other than a mental illness?
No, Your Honor. I think, again, applying the ordinary tools that should have been applied, looking to either the symptom, treatment, or diagnosis, the ordinary person in those circumstances would find that this is covered by the mental illness limitation. We don't have to be 100% exclusive to be able
to
prevail.
Can reasonable persons disagree about that? About whether bipolar, in knowing all the facts that have been adduced at trial, could reasonable persons disagree about whether bipolar is a mental disease within the terms?
Given the information that is presently out there, which is detailed, I think, in a variety of sources in our briefs, I think a reasonable person today, other than an expert advocating a position, would not be able to conclude that it is other than, under this definition, mental.
plaintiff's counsel said they put evidence in showing that this had, that bipolar had a physical cause, and that you did not put any counter evidence in.
That wasn't the purpose of the trial, and indeed when we tried to put on some additional evidence, we were precluded in the trial. But that was not the focus of the trial, Your Honor. The focus of the trial, and it was identified, I think, earlier on in the questioning. The district court very specifically told us what...
Does she have it, and is it a disability?
Right.
But so I want to come back. Is it your position that bipolar does not have a physical cause?
I don't think we know at this moment. What we know is that there are correlates that are often present. That is as much as the science has clearly established at this point in time, Your Honor.
Just correlates?
Yes, Your Honor. That part is pretty widely accepted, that there are correlates. Cause is a different matter. That's a matter for the scholarly debate, which is not part of the ERISA analysis.
Did you make that argument to the district court? But I don't see that. I don't see that argument. I may have missed it. Is it in your brief that this is simply a corollary and there's no evidence?
Oh, yeah. I think we did. But at that point, again, the court, I don't believe, was that wasn't what the court was bringing us to address. The court told us very specifically what it wanted us to address and not address.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case.